The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. Welcome to Comics League International, where we're going to discuss a comic internationally. Yes. Except this time, my guest again, same guest as our Gotham Central podcast, Lucas.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Lucas. Good. Yeah. It's a
rainy afternoon.
It's a rainy afternoon here, so it's a perfect time to talk about comics. And today we are going to talk about a 6-issue comic book miniseries that was released in 2002 and stretched into 2003, Spider-Man Blue. Have you read this before?
No, this is the first time I've read any Spider-Man comic.
Your first any Spider-Man comic.
I guess I'll inform listeners again. I'm very much naive to the world of comic books.
Wow. So. Have you seen the Spider-Man, any of the Spider-Man movies?
Yes, I've seen the movies, and as a child, I watched the cartoon.
So I'm
familiar with the Spider-Man universe and some of the characters, but maybe not to the kind of. Particular, I guess not as well developed as the comic books.
Okay.
Delve into.
Then, wow, this is an interesting choice for us to read without with not having any real Spider-Man comics background. Just to give background to Spider-Man Blue, this is done by the creators, the writer Jeff Loeb and the artist Tim Sale. They're a pretty well-regarded team. Mm. They've done several works for DC, popular among them Dark Victory and A Long Halloween with Batman. And also they did one of my favorites, A Superman for All Seasons, which I'm gonna try and make us read later on. Mm. And then during this period, they did 3 sets of miniseries for Marvel based on kind of origin stories for Daredevil, for Hulk, for Spider-Man. I always find references to a Captain America one, but I've never actually been able to find a finished Captain America product. Mm. This is a bit rambling, but it's kind of the Marvel ones were almost looks back on these different characters and origin / important parts to them.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these topics they talk about are issues that came. Spider-Man had already been established in Marvel's, but he was already. This was, the original Spider-Man creators were Stan Lee, Steve Ditko. And then in the late 30s, I think 38 was his last issue, Ditko left, and then stepped in John Romita. And pretty much this Spider-Man Blue covers important snippets of the first, let's say, 12 issues of the Stan Lee John Romita run.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Spider-Man talking about these events.
Yeah, it's like a memoir of Spider-Man, or
back when people used cassette tapes.
Yes, exactly, in their attics.
Yeah, they're just creeping around in an attic,
Yeah.
Click whir, click whir.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's an interesting way to kind of provide the, how would I say, the frame the dialogue.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know? And that it's this kind of more of this, not really memorandum, but it's something like a
yeah.
set of messages
to,
know, to a
Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gwen Stacy.
Who's dead.
Yes, who is dead.
So, overall, what do you think of this?
Very, very different from the perception I had, I guess, of Spider-Man maybe going into it. I knew snippets of the, I guess, Spider-Man chronology.
Yeah.
And I knew that even... I might be totally wrong, but
oh, you know,
I was always under the impression that that there was, you know, this time when he was with Gwen Stacy, and
yeah.
but it was, at least from my knowledge, I always thought it was like something like in between episodes where he had been dating Mary Jane. Am I mistaken there?
It's now. I kind of grew up reading Spider-Man, but I'll be honest, I haven't read a lot of the issues of this time period.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually slowly making my way through those, you know, classic Spider-Man stuff.
Mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I just read 41 before reading this, which is basically the one where Rhino first appears. And,
oh, okay, yeah.
And you know, but kind of like reading up on comics and kind of just general stuff,
mm-hmm.
it's that kind of the timeline between Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy gets kind of fuzzy because there's the various retcons and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That yeah, he dated Gwen Stacy, but I mean, Jerry Conway, who's the writer who killed Gwen Stacy. You know, I've heard interviews with him who basically said, like, one of the reasons they were able to kind of make that happen is because she really hadn't appeared. Gwen Stacy hadn't appeared for, you know, a dozen or more issues before they decided to kill off Gwen Stacy.
Hmm.
And, you know, I think in the years afterwards, like, the most important thing about Gwen Stacy is that she died.
Right.
Definitely, yeah. If she had just kind of drifted away or, you know, not been brought back for the express purpose of killing her,
mm-hmm.
which I can't say that's exactly what they did, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, then she wouldn't really be a thing. She would just be another...
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what makes her so significant is that
yeah.
she's a close friend who gets killed off. Kind of thing.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And I mean, depending on how you want to like read into the issues, I think it's safe to say that either the Mary Jane Gwen flirtation was an issue, but I don't think it was, you know, until after Gwen's death that the relationship really became like intense between Mary Jane and, you know, I mean,
and Peter Parker, yeah, yeah,
yeah. But the popular way to paint it is, no, Gwen was his one true love,
right?
And then she got snatched away,
right?
Where, you know, I mean, so far, every issue I've read, which admittedly there's 60 issues between where I am now and where she dies.
Mm-hmm.
She's still the like the intriguing blonde girl who doesn't quite know what to make of Peter Parker.
I see. So it's not, yeah. Maybe their relationship isn't as close as Spider-Man Blue makes it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I mean, certainly not in that time period.
Right.
You know. I gotta say, reading through it, my two big impressions. I still, for the most part, love Tim Sale's artwork.
Yeah, the art's amazing.
It's
I do love that.
Yeah,
much.
Like his figure work, his lines, like the fact that he can make everything look so angular and curved at the same time. Just,
yeah.
you know, Spider-Man. Like, and it's the primarily flat colors that go into it,
mm-hmm.
kind of make it feel almost even more of the late 60s or
mm-hmm.
that era of comic bookdom. But at the same time, I'm not that big a fan of the overall story.
Yeah, just a very, I just had a very strange impression of it. I was, it the Peter Parker is different in, I think, some senses.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know? And
well, how do you mean?
Huh, that's a good question. How do I mean? I guess the human Peter Parker is not so much, I guess, reserved or maybe introverted as
yeah.
as he's originally, you know, portrayed.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mary Jane's much more extroverted. And
she's
like,
a force of nature.
We're going to do this. Hey, we're going to do this. And then it's like because of her exaggerated or exacerbated extrovertedness, then that you see that gets like pulled out of Peter Parker
yeah,
and these
yeah.
issues too. And he kind of like rides it, you know. He uses that. He's like, oh yeah, you know, my job, gonna go shoot Spider-Man, dangerous.
And I kept on reading this, and I can never keep straight in my head with all the various retcons and things like that. Like, when exactly was Mary Jane supposed to know that Peter Parker was Spider-Man?
Hmm.
Because there seems to be, maybe I'm reading into it, but with all her, oh yeah, your dangerous job, like the various things like that, is like, is she supposed to know now?
Yeah, it's like, it's yeah, it doesn't really give you a good idea of whether she knows or not.
Yeah.
Or she knows or not yet.
And I'm pretty sure I've read issues where it's established that, oh, she knew beforehand that he was Spider-Man, and then I think I've read other things which are like, but not really. So it just kind of seems, you know, where in the timeline.
Yeah, exactly. I think, yeah, we kind of discussed this prior, was chronologically this set of issues, it's
yeah
completely like you can't pinpoint it really.
It's yeah, because it's
the only thing that really holds it chronologically together is the fact that Gwen Stacy is alive.
Yeah, basically.
that's about it, though. Yeah.
And I don't know, like, I mean, it is touching. It's well told, I guess, but it you know, it almost feels like each issue is like, let's throw a scene we like on the board, and yeah, we'll add a shadowy figure to make it seem like a story, but it's really not. And then I don't know. To
yeah, that's really true. I think the kind of main story you have here is this like pseudo love triangle between Gwen Stacy, Mary Jane,
yeah,
and Peter Parker, and then if you want to, you can throw Harry Osborn in there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have, you know, alongside that is the episodes where Peter or Spider-Man's fighting all these very classic and recognizable villainous characters, but they're so separate,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just used as these episodes where Peter can, you know, reflect and regret upon the missed opportunities he had with Gwen.
Which is
really odd, you know.
And also, like, reading this, I just wonder, is this one of those things that, you know, did Loeb and Sale want to pay homage to that beginning of the Lee Romita arc?
Hmm.
Or did they want to really touch on and use Gwen as a way of examining those few issues? But, you know, but then, I mean, I kept on thinking, like, especially when I realized in issue 5 or 6 of, like, they're not going to get to the death.
Right.
You know, which, I mean, it seems awkward to talk about Gwen Stacy and show why Gwen Stacy is important or means something without having the thing that makes her meaningful in it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, the most significant moment, I guess, that happens between Peter and Gwen is just when, you know, they have like an intimate kiss, you know, and that's like the,
yeah,
that's like the closer to the story. I'm sorry, everybody, but yeah.
Oh no, spoilers.
And you're like looking at it, you're like, okay,
they're
that's
kissing.
That, yeah, that wasn't that
sure.
wasn't yeah that wasn't unexpected.
Yeah.
So.
And.
You know, and then you have, you know, and then it kind of closes again with his, when it takes you back to reality and he has the moment of reflection with Mary Jane. But even that.
It's
not something unique to this.
No.
To this collection.
No.
You know?
No.
I think that's something you might understand. You'd understand these feelings and this kind of scenario without reading Spider-Man Blue.
And that's, yeah, I think that's one of the problems I have with this is, I mean, like I said, it's not that it's bad storytelling.
No.
And the art is, it's gorgeous art.
Yeah.
It's bright and happy where it needs to be. It's moody and dark where it needs to be. But it doesn't feel, like, even as a story, it doesn't feel finished.
No.
You know, you, like,
definitely not.
Do you want more in the future to kind of show where Mary Jane and Peter are at that moment? Do you want to, you know, like, it's just kind of like, oh, things are just starting and we're done.
Yeah, really. It kind of just showed you not even the climax. And it didn't even show you, like, the climax of Gwen and Peter's relationship. It just showed you that it was on the upswing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it just ends.
And, I mean, I wonder if this had been 10 issues, if this had been 12 issues, and they had kind of continued, like, would it have become something great?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But as it is, you know.
And I think it would have had potential, you know, if it were a longer arc,
yeah.
I guess.
Or then, like, since, you know, each issue feels like it had just a touch more cheese, a touch more kind of like the scene in issue 6 where they're at the party, was this 6 or 5 where they're at the party and there's that joke of, you know, oh look, I saw Spider-Man fighting, isn't that your dream, or an amazing fantasy,
right.
and that line just made me groan. It's like, oh,
cringe.
Wow, that's awful.
Yeah, there's definitely some moments, I think. That
like that, where they kept on referencing the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, ah, oh, Jeff Loeb.
Yeah, yeah.
You write some amazing things at times.
Yeah. Or,
this is not one of them.
And even in some of the, like, the how the issues develop too, like, When I look at issue 6,
yeah.
When you have Kraven, the hunter. Yes.
A great-looking Kraven, though.
Yeah, very good art. Again,
yeah.
Lovely art. And he just busts in, crashes the party, and he's got, you know, the scent of Spider-Man, and he grabs Harry Osborn because Harry Osborn uses Peter Parker's aftershave.
Hello.
Like,
yeah.
I really had a hard time. Like, being like, that's a stretch. I have to say, because, yeah.
That's one of those things that, you know, not being familiar with the source, if that was something that was in the comics, like, of the era, then I'd be like, you know what, sure, why not? But there's enough, like, little changes throughout the issues that I can't be sure if that was something that, you know, Stan Lee did in the late 60s.
Right.
Or was it something that Jeff Loeb did in the early 2000s.
That's true, yeah.
And that's, you know, I hate to say one thing's good and one thing's bad if it's the same thing.
Right.
But one thing is a loving homage to, like, look, this is what comics were back
right,
then.
Right.
And as silly as it is, I want to throw it in there. And I can get behind that all the way.
Mm.
But if that's something like, no, this means something.
Mm.
It shows why Peter Parker consistently smells bad,
right.
Because after that day he swore off,
right, that aftershave,
which you know, let's roll that snowball a little bit more. Does that mean, like, Peter Parker shops at the hypoallergenic no-scented soap place.
Yeah, right? Like, obviously it's going to have an effect. Like, obviously Peter Parker
must... Is that speed
must,
stick? Right. It must be Spider-Man.
Exactly, yeah. So I assume that Peter Parker would have been intelligent enough to be like, so why did he grab Harry Osborn and not, you know, me when he did that? Oh, it must be the aftershave. Like, I feel like he has the rationale to come to that conclusion.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see what the like consequences of that would be.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like it really downplays like the villainous identity of Kraven to be like, look, this guy can't even distinguish between two people. He's getting confused with aftershave of all things.
Yeah.
So it's dually kind of diminutive to the nature of the characters in the story. So that's the problem I have. I'm like, wow, okay, these guys aren't so great after all.
Well, you know, he did go crazy later.
Yes, that's true.
One thing, since you know, I've been talking about like how much I love the art, I'm just gonna throw this out there. I'm not that big a fan of Tim Sale's Lizard. Like, it just... I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the fact that it looks too much like a gecko.
Yeah, it's
or,
maybe it's a little too reptilian.
Yeah.
It's not anthropomorphized enough.
Yeah, or just... When... There's a style of drawing dinosaurs from... an earlier generation where they never quite looked real. You know, like they didn't even, it wasn't even like a verisimilitude where it looks like it should be real. It just looks like, oh, you drew a drawing of a thing that might have existed. Like, if I want to say, like, if you look at how, you know, dinosaurs were done in the old Hanna-Barbera days and things like that,
right,
they just never quite looked like I will never believe, like,
yeah,
I can believe,
right,
in your Gloop and your caveman, but I'm just not gonna believe that's what a dinosaur's head is gonna look like.
Right.
And there's something in the art of that which I just, you know, I couldn't get behind. I mean, it's skillfully done, don't get me wrong, but it's...
I see. So the lizard illustrations remind you of those.
Yeah, yeah, like the way that the way the head is and stuff,
yeah,
like that. It's,
yeah,
like,
yeah, that's true.
You know, it's a little too... I don't even want to say cartoony. It's just a little too,
yeah,
fakey. You know.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
And I demand realism in my anthropomorphic,
right,
reptiles.
Right.
Another interesting thing I think about reading this is not only thinking about, you know, the stories that, you know, are being presented, those old early Amazing Spider-Man, but also just thinking about this kind of shows what was important in comics in that time, and like how many of the craziness of comic books had happened by then, or like, you know, Peter Parker and Mary Jane, they were a thing, and they were married when this came out, and here we are, like, you know, a decade later, and that married has been undone by the devil.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of the craziness you knew of what's happened. I think all of this since that came out, you know, like Green Goblin and Norman Osborn. Yeah, they had an affair and had kids.
What? This is true?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's one of the storylines that people like, let's not talk about that.
Yeah, that's...
But this was, I can't remember what the actual date was, but I'm pretty sure it happened a little after this telling. But, yeah, they decided what would make it interesting. And I can never quite tell if this is something the writer of the time, Straczynski, the guy who did Babylon 5, If this was his idea or something he was made to do by editorial.
Right.
But yeah, before she died, she had a one-night stand with Norman Osborn and then ran away to give birth to twins and yada yada. And then his kids somehow grew up and fought Spider-Man, and
that's, oh boy.
Yeah. Kind of puts a little different twist on Spider-Man Blue, doesn't it?
Yeah, Spider-Man Blue is much more appealing after hearing that
right?
plot. I'd love to read an expanded version of
Spider-Man Blue. They should make Spider-Man Blue 2.
Yeah.
And one of the issues being Gwen Stacy and Norman Osborn on a date.
Right. That would be very interesting.
If they talked about that, who should be talking into the cassette recorder? You know, where I can't believe I just had a date with Spider-Man's girlfriend.
Right.
I'm the Green Goblin. Is this the most evil thing I've ever done? I think so.
Oh boy, that would be very good.
That would. So Loeb and Sale, I think they should get on this.
Yes.
Oh, no, this is. I want to be able to keep on like gushing about it, but.
Because yeah, I think again it's just tons the idea of. I think potential, you know, I think there's a lot of. Potential.
Yeah.
for the arc or the story, because you have a great artist, and you have. This very, interesting, plotline because of how. Roughly developed it is, you know,
yeah.
You have so much opportunity to really expand upon it or become detailed into it, and it's just, it leaves you with wanting so much.
It does. It's, you know, later on, you really should read some of the other Loeb and Sale works I talked about, because, you know, I mean, the Daredevil Yellow, which is when he, about the time he had his original yellow and red outfit. And I don't know, there's something about that one that whenever I read, it just kind of makes me come away going like, yeah, Daredevil, you're great. And I read this and I go, I want to read those Spider-Man issues. But I don't come away being like, all right, Peter Parker, I love you.
Right.
You're great. It's more, I read this and I go, oh, right, this is the one I'm not a big fan of. When I read back over this, you know, I can't help but wonder what areas, you know, because there's so many interesting little storylines in there, both just for being crazy and pivotal moments for the Gwen Spider-Man relationship. You know, like, well, why, I wonder why. Like, would it have been better if they had the issue, which is right after the Rhino, right? Like, between the Rhino getting beaten up and the Rhino, like, breaking out from jail, which is John Jameson, you know, J. Jonah Jameson's son, coming back from outer space, covered with space spores,
right,
and turning super strong and trying to fight Spider-Man. Like, like, why shouldn't that be an issue?
Yeah, that would have been kind of cool.
Yeah, just like,
yeah.
Here's the Rhino, and here's the Green Goblin, and here's a guy in a neon yellow space outfit going crazy.
Right. I mean, why not? I think that's the kind of shows some of the problems with the series, is that the rationale behind that suggestion is totally fine, because all the episodes in which Spider-Man's engaged with a villain, it has no bearing on the.
On the actual
story.
Yeah.
So that's why you could introduce something that as ridiculous or like that, yeah, as kind of seemingly ridiculous as that.
But it would have worked.
Yep.
It worked. Yeah. Have you seen the recent Amazing Spider-Man movies?
No, I haven't seen those.
Okay, well then, there goes that line.
Yeah.
You're screwing me again, Lucas. You're screwing me again.
I'm sorry.
No, I've watched the first one, and I haven't watched the second one because I hear it's awful.
I see.
But, you know, Gwen Stacy,
mm-hmm.
big character in those as well.
Oh.
I don't think they do much with it, though.
Right. Yeah, like, you know, I watched the Tobey Maguire trilogy,
yes.
If you will.
Yes.
And
Seabiscuit. Wait, no. You mean Spider-Man.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I have my own Tobey Maguire trilogy.
And, I mean, I was like, okay, yeah, that's not bad. But, and then when I saw them, when I saw that they were making The Amazing Spider-Man, I'm just like, why are they doing this? Like, to me, it was like, it felt like it was beating a dead horse.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's to hold on to the rights if they don't make a movie.
Right.
But I think it's, and that might come into one of the reasons why I'm also kind of a little underwhelmed with this is, you know, even when this came out, it's not an origin story.
No.
But it's also another, like, I feel like I've seen this story before and done better. I wish I could remember the annual it was in, or maybe it was in one of those, like, Spider-Man 300 issues.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just this, you know, I haven't read this since a kid, but it was, I want to say the art was even done by Romita Sr. again,
mm-hmm.
and it was just Mary Jane, like, this is when they, her and Peter Parker were married, you know, going through her stuff and finding a collection of photos that she and Gwen Stacy had together from back there, and it was this kind of thing. It was just like Mary Jane almost narrating, you know, like, I remember Gwen, because
mm-hmm.
I think the title of this little, like, geez, probably not even 10 page storyline,
mm-hmm.
And I mean, there, you know, having never read any of those issues, or probably at that point, I might not have even read a story with Gwen Stacy in it,
right?
But to have that still stick in my mind after, you know, 15, maybe even 20 years,
mm-hmm.
Just kind of shows, like, how powerful that story can be, the idea of Gwen Stacy being someone important and being lost,
mm-hmm.
and I've probably read Spider-Man Blue. This would be either my second or third time reading it, but each time I get to the end and go, like, oh, right, it doesn't pay off.
Yeah, why didn't they do more with it?
Yeah.
Because it obviously, from your perspective, it was a very short but powerful episode that...
Yeah, yeah, because the Gwen Stacy one, or the I Remember Gwen Stacy,
mm-hmm.
oh, it was powerful, and it really made me, like, wow, and this was important, and this kind of makes me go, like, wow, this creative team really wants to make her sound important, but I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
They're not whetting my appetite enough.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess the big question: does this make you want to go out and read more Spider-Man?
Not really. I mean, not if it follows the same type of rationale and kind of disconnect between Peter Parker and Spider-Man
mm-hmm.
as this one did. Because I think this one really kind of did do that. It was...
Separate the two into...
Yeah, but it did it really poorly.
Yeah.
It didn't... Because for every episode, obviously, it was focused quite a bit on Gwen Stacy, but it was like, every time it was like, well, I could go out to see Gwen tonight, but I gotta go fight Rhino. And it was like,
yeah.
And then there's some points where it says, you know, like, oh, I have to, but I have to do this, and he becomes much more. What's the term I'm looking for? Yeah, yeah.
The Parker luck, or having to choose responsibility.
Yeah.
I mean, it, you know, it's definitely a theme in Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Usually, it's not every issue one after the other, like.
Right.
You know, I mean, sometimes multiple times in the same issue of being, I can't have any fun because I'm Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
It's raining outside, but I gotta be outside because I'm Spider-Man.
Right. I got a cold, but
I'm Spider-Man. I'm Mopey Spider. I'm Spider-Man.
Right.
Blue.
Right, exactly. That in itself just makes you shake your head.
I don't think this would sell as well if they called it Spider-Man Mopey. I don't think.
Yeah, but like when I first saw the title, Spider-Man Blue, I'm like, oh, I wonder what that means, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder what that blue will be symbolic of. When I see it, it's like a melancholy blue. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I mean, that's...
It's so cliche.
It
very much is.
It really is.
One of the oldest cliches.
And that's why, I want to keep on bringing up Daredevil Yellow and Hulk Gray.
Mm-hmm.
Because in those, I mean... Daredevil was not a coward, you know, it wasn't that type of yellow,
right.
And it wasn't whatever negative attribute can be associated with gray.
Apathy, I don't know.
Hulk not smash, Hulk sit here.
Hulk indifferent.
Yeah, which, now I kind of want to write that. But, you know, those colors, like, I mean, Daredevil had his yellow outfit as a beginning, so it's very much an origin story.
Right,
And the Hulk, you know, originally he wasn't green, he was gray.
Right,
and
exactly.
There's stuff to that, and fleshes out in it. And
yeah.
Spider-Man, no, pretty much, he was, I guess, this is, it's not an origin, it's just when the day Spider-Man became sad.
Yeah, it's like rainy day Spider-Man.
There needs to be an epilogue of like, Peter, you know you're not allowed into the attic. You get so whiny.
Right. It should be a rainy day, and you should have, like, you know.
tell Gwen I said hello, you whiny bastard.
Exactly.
And I don't know. And now it just makes me think, like, where was party Mary Jane there? Like, where is she going? Like,
yeah.
Hey, you get out of the dark attic and like whining to yourself. Like, turn on a light, put on some clothes, let's go dancing.
That's really one thing I noticed too, is how different Mary Jane is from that, like, then and now.
Yeah.
And I was just like, can you guys get away with this? How do you think you're gonna get away with that? You know.
I mean, I want to say they were going for like, oh no, she understands, she's supportive, but it's.
She's totally different though.
Yeah, it's like. I mean, that's in a movie that would be, oh, she's going to go in the other room and start drinking and crying. Like, that would be the next scene for Mary Jane. Like, tell the woman you really loved, I said hello, I'm going to go down a bottle of wine. I'm a movie star model.
Right.
And you just
don't appreciate
it. You're just going to hang out in a character who the only reason you remember her is because you got her killed. That's right. I said it, Spider-Man.
Yep. Are you blue yet? You better be now.
do you think Mary Jane just ever lost it and just like, yeah,
guilt tripped
him. By the way, you realize everyone you ever loved, like,
died.
Yeah. Wow, Uncle Ben, Gwen Stacy. Anyone else? And we can add on to
Harry Osborn. Spoilers.
At that point, all the Osborns I think were dead.
Any Osborn?
Yeah, they probably had a neighbor. Like, oh, someone else's house exploded.
Yeah.
Wow. Man, Mary Jane, she's holding back a lot of rage. That's what I'm feeling.
I think so too. Yeah. That'll be the next. Issue.
Mary Jane Red.
Yeah.
For rage.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be good.
Yes.
Yeah, and right, and what's great about it is, you know, with Red being rage, it's subtle.
Right, of course.
Just as subtle as Spider-Man Mopey.
Yes.
I think I've had more fun kind of making fun of this than I have. But I mean, I don't know. I still think that if someone wants to go out here, I don't want to say necessarily buy it, but I think people should at least, you know, go find a copy, flip through it, because the art is gorgeous.
Yeah, like, definitely.
It really makes me want to read, like, maybe like a very upbeat, high energy, or you know, Tim Sale drawn Spider-Man book.
Yeah, because I think that a lot of the art is very explosive or really catches the eye.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really great about it. And I feel like that could even be, like, an incentive for them to just include, you know, a villain in every issue. Is
yeah.
Simply so it's just like, okay, art team, go at it.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, the Vulture fight in the, like,
right?
There's
awesome.
That double page spread,
yeah,
where he's got one, Spider-Man's got one strand of webbing on one Vulture and another on the other Vulture, and they're just
right.
fighting, like, oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And then click, fight the Vulture.
Yeah. Caught a cold.
Oh, my life sucks. Boy, I wish I was married to a supermodel or something.
So.
Oh, wait.
Yeah. Exactly.
She's in the other room drinking. I wonder why.
I want some soup. And Huck Finn.
Spider-Man soup.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Spider-Man soup for the soul.
And yet there were, like, dotted throughout it that Huck Finn bit. That was cute. I like that.
Yeah, that was cute.
Oh, what a coincidence. Your Aunt May told me you liked it. Like, the way that was, like, oh, that's...
I thought they did nail the relationship between Aunt May and Peter Parker pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really
yeah.
cute.
I mean, that's...
Milk mustache.
It was... And kind of, I was wondering if that was also a meta commentary about, like, this was also the era where there was the milk commercials of superheroes with milk mustaches
oh,
going
gosh.
Around. So, like, is that what that was referencing?
Oh,
man. Or am I just... really reading into it.
Right.
But, I mean, that's what's so troubling about this is, for me, with Jeff Loeb's writing,
mm-hmm.
when he's on, he's great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but when he's not on, we get things like Red Hulk,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if you've ever read Red Hulk. It's as good as it sounds. It's a different Hulk that's red because he's angry.
Okay.
And I don't know. I think reading over his or thinking over like his career, this might be the part where I really start thinking where I stop being as big a supporter of Jeff Loeb.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I didn't like a lot of his stuff after this, and yet almost everything I've read of his work beforehand, I'm like, yeah, you're great.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Yeah, I think that's this collection or arc, I guess, kind of encapsulates that the highs are high,
yeah.
but the lows are
really
subterranean.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I guess there's just one other comment to make, which is, have you ever seen the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie Commando?
Maybe, but not to the point of recollection.
You should
recollection.
You should go rent it, watch it. If people still rent movies, I guess with iTunes you can. Because no one pirates, no one.
That's yeah.
Yeah.
Myth.
Wrong.
Total myth.
Yeah. But this the same, you know, Jeff Loeb started as a screenwriter.
Oh, okay.
And he actually wrote
Commando. I see.
Which for 80s action fun,
mm-hmm.
is a lot of 80s action fun.
That's good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Any other final comments?
I guess when maybe this is a tie-on from the last time we spoke.
Yeah.
Started watching Gotham.
Oh, yeah. What?
That was amazing. I'm hooked on watching Gotham.
Ooh. Wow, then we might have to kind of tie in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Each episode I watch gets further away from what I want it to be.
Really?
Yeah.
It's there's some things I like about it and some things that I'm kind of like, you're pushing it there.
Then let's have that conversation later on.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Still no online presence, still hiding, still lurking on the online?
Yep.
Okay. Then forget about Lucas. He is invisible online. But you can get in touch with me by going to my website, which is deadlytroubadour.com. Go there, listen to the podcast, read some short stories, let me know what you think. All right, cheers and goodbye.